16. Known Exits. Milgram was reading the New York Times, finishing his breakfast coffee in a bakery on Bleecker, while Brown conducted a series of quiet, tense, and extremely pissed-off conversations with whoever was supposed to be in charge of watching the IF's known exits when the IF was home sleeping, or whatever the IF did when he was home. Known exits seemed to Milgram to imply that the IF's neighborhood might be riddled with gaslit opium tunnels and the odd subterranean divan, a possibility Milgram found appealing, however unlikely. Whoever was on the other end of this particular call was not having a good morning. The IF and another male had left the IF's building, walked to the Canal Street subway, entered, and vanished. Milgram knew, from having also overheard Brown's half of other conversations, that the IF and his family tended to do that, and particularly around subways. Milgram imagined that the IF and his family had the keys to some special kind of subway-based porosity, a way into the cracks and holes and spaces between things. Milgram himself was having a better morning than he recalled having had in some time, and this in spite of Brown's having shaken him awake to translate Volapük. Then he'd fallen back into some dream he could no longer remember, not a pleasant one, something about blue light coming from his skin or beneath it. But all in all, very pleasant to be here in the village this early in the day, having coffee and a pastry and enjoying the Times someone had left. Brown didn't like the New York Times. Brown actually didn't like news media of any kind, Milgram had come to understand, because the news conveyed did not issue from any reliable, that was to say, governmental source. Nor could it really, under present conditions of war, as any genuine news, news of any strategic import whatever, was by definition precious and not to be wasted on the nation's mere citizenry. Milgram certainly wasn't going to argue with any of that. If Brown had declared the Queen of England to be a shape-shifting alien reptile craving the warm flesh of human infants, Milgram would not have argued. But midway through a third-page piece on the NSA and data mining, something occurred to Milgram. "Say," he said to Brown, who just ended a call and was looking at his phone as if he wished he knew a way to torture it, "this NSA data mining thing." It hung there between them, somewhere above the table. He wasn't in the habit of initiating conversations with Brown, and for good reason. Brown looked from the phone to Milgram, his expression unchanged. "I was thinking," Milgram heard himself say, "about your IF, about the Volapük. If the NSA can do what it says they can here, then it should be pretty easy to fold a logarithm into the mix that would grab your Volapük and nothing else. You wouldn't even need much of a sample of their family dialect. You could just find half a dozen dialectal examples of the form and shoot for a kind of average. Anything that went through the phone system after that that had that tag, bingo. You wouldn't need to be changing any more batteries on the IF's coat rack." Milgram was genuinely pleased with having thought of this. But Brown, he saw, was not happy with Milgram for having thought of it. "That's only good for overseas calls," Brown said, and seemed to be considering whether or not to hit him. "Ah," Milgram said. He put his head down and pretended to read until Brown got back on the phone, quietly chewing someone else out for losing the IF and the other male. Milgram couldn't get back into his article, but continued to pretend to read the paper. Something was working its way up inside him, from some new and peculiarly discomforting angle. So far, he'd taken it for granted that Brown, and by extension his people, were government agents of some kind, presumably federal. And yet, if the NSA had been doing what this Times article said they had been doing, and he, Milgram, was reading about it, why should he suppose that what Brown had said was true? The reason Americans weren't freaking out over this NSA thing, Milgram assumed, was that they'd already been taking it for granted since at least the 1960s that the CIA was tapping everybody's phone. It was the stuff of bad episodic television. It was something little kids knew to be true. But if there were Volapük being texted in Manhattan, and the real government really needed it as badly as Brown seemed to need it, wouldn't they get it? Milgram folded his paper. "But what if," asked the upwardly burrowing voice, "Brown was not really a government agent?" There had until now been some part of Milgram willing to suppose that being held captive by federal agents was in a sense the same as being under their protection. While the majority of him had suspected this was a dubious formulation, it had taken something, perhaps the new calm and perspective afforded by his change of medication, to bring him to this moment of unified awareness. What if Brown was just an asshole with a gun? It was something to think about, and to his surprise, he found that he could. "I need to use the washroom," he said. Brown muted his phone. "There's a back door," he said, "out the kitchen. Someone's out there in case you think you're leaving. If they thought you might get away, they'd shoot you." Milgram nodded, got up. He wasn't going to run, but for the first time, he thought Brown might be bluffing. In the washroom, he ran cool water over his wrists, then looked at his hands. They were still his. He wiggled his fingers. Amazing, really.
End of disc 2.